Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a production of KCBX and its collaborative team of program hosts, where today host Chris Hinken-Barker will speak with Laura Deloy, Program and Education Manager with the Alzheimer's Association, California Central Coast Chapter, about the many challenges that families face in caring for loved ones with dementia. We invite you to listen, learn, and participate in our conversation today between 1 and 2 p.m. We're live in the studio, so please do call in and be part of the discussion at 805-781-3875. With that, let's join Chris and her guest. Over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Brad. According to a study published in January of this year by the Journal of Nature Medicine, the average 55-year-old's lifetime risk of dementia is 42%. But the risk is not the same at every age. It happens mostly after the age of 85, and Laura's going to speak more to that. Between the ages of 55 and 75, the average person risk of developing dementia was about 4% in their study. By the time the person turned 85, the risk was about 20%. The highest risk didn't reach it until they were 85 or after their 95th birthday for the 42%. So dementia is not an expected part of aging until after the age of 85. With U.S. residents living longer, it means that more are at risk for the disease. And that's one of the concerns in the population and the healthcare system as we go forward. More recent studies have also included more extensive, more diverse populations, and for a more extended period of time. And that has resulted in more differentiation in identifying some of the populations that are at higher risk for dementia or some form of dementia, including Alzheimer's. And those two populations that have been identified as the highest risk are women and Black Americans here. It's probable that your family or you've been associated with friends or loved ones who've been impacted by coping with someone who has dementia or supporting someone who has dementia. My guest today, Laura, is someone with a lot of information about this. And we've done shows in the past about the general information around dementia and differentiation. We'll talk a little bit about that. But in today's show, we want to talk around some more tips and realistic kind of resources for folks that are living with people who have some form of dementia or are being impacted by that, and also what not to do's and things that you can do that are more practical kinds of things. And Laura, I really want to welcome you for coming back.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. It's wonderful to be here. Really appreciate getting the information out there into our communities and helping to support those folks who are caregiving and knowing that they're not alone. I think that's our biggest key, is always knowing you're not alone.
And we had hoped to get the new statistics from the Alzheimer's Association before today, but they're coming out soon, right?
They are. Last I heard, they're coming out actually next week.
Okay.
So we're just a little early.
Too early.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But we do, and a lot of those statistics also come out at the end of July is our International Alzheimer's Association conference. And so that's where researchers from around the world gather and share about what's happening and kind of those any new treatments and things like that that might be coming out.
And all that's available for the public as well. Mm-hmm. And how can people access that information?
Yeah, go to our website, alz.org is the best way. There's a huge amount of information on there, so I always encourage people to use the search bar. But look for conference for the AAIC, Alzheimer's Association International Conference. And there are free webinars that, yes, the general public can attend and sign up for and attend in that way too.
Talk a little bit about the kind of education and resources that are available through the region, through local communities for Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia.
Yeah. So the Alzheimer's Association is a national nonprofit. And then here on the Central Coast, our chapter is the California Central Coast. And so we cover San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. My territory is basically all San Luis Obispo County in northern Santa Barbara County. So down through Santa Ynez and Lompoc. A coworker covers the other part of the Central Coast as well. And we are a volunteer-driven organization. So we have community educators out in the community and support groups as well for caregivers, both online, in person. And you can find that as well, linking into ALZ.org. Or if you go to ALZ.org/CA Central Coast, and then that will get you to our local chapter here.
And that's ALZ is in zebra.
Exactly. Okay. Yes. Okay. Short for Alzheimer's. And so we have a variety of education classes that are just always, a really good place for folks to start. And then even as the disease changes over time, because sometimes people are caring for folks with dementia for 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years. And so that person changes and how we communicate and how their behaviors that are related to dementia can really change as well. So being able to, you know, maybe take the effective communication strategies class in that kind of initial diagnosis stage, and then also in the later stages, just things hit us differently depending on where we are in that caregiving process as well. And then we also have, a variety of caregiver support groups. Here in San Luis Obispo, we have a spouse support group that meets at Coastal Peaks Coffee Shop once a month. We have a group out in Morro Bay that meets in person in Cambria and Paso, all through Ventura County and Santa Barbara City and Santa Maria. And then there's also just online courses, whether that's through our specific chapter or if you go to ALZ.org or call our helpline number, you can say, hey, I'm looking for a support group that's Spanish speaking. What's available in the upcoming week? And they can direct you on our helpline to say, here's one that's at 5 o'clock on Wednesday, you know, and you can attend that as well. Or if you're an adult child as a caregiver, there's just a whole variety of possibilities in that. Especially in our digital world, we're able to, you know, go to something that might hit us better time-wise that happens on the East Coast versus, you know, something that's here
right
during the day.
So let's talk a bit about dementia, Alzheimer's, and when it is and isn't something mm-hmm. to be concerned about. Because as we hear about those kinds of statistics, as we're getting older, as we're getting more forgetful, as our lives are getting more complex mm-hmm. and they're getting more stressful, forgetfulness does not mean that we have dementia. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
How do we know?
So we do have a whole 10 warning signs, either brochure or class, whichever. It really looks at how is that memory loss changing over the course of time, changing for us specifically. If I was never good at remembering people's names,
right,
all of a sudden, if I'm still not remembering them at 72, that right. doesn't mean that I have Alzheimer's or uh-huh. dementia.
Some people just don't recall people's names.
Right. Yeah. But if I was always really good at that and right. could, you know, learn 12 people's names in a room within a couple of minutes, then it's like, well, I wonder what's happening there.
Right.
So there are certainly, you know, anybody out there has probably taken a cognitive test of drawing a clock and having to put the time on, remembering 3 words, having a conversation and speaking those words back. There is stress in that, but that can also show a lot of how the person's brain is functioning. But it is, and as you were sharing statistics at the beginning, that, you know, as we age, we become at higher risk for getting some type of dementia. But those, you know, it still isn't a given.
Right.
We have risk factors. If we have, immediate family members of parents and grandparents who have had dementia, that can certainly increase our risk. It doesn't mean that we're going to definitely get it. Right.
Yeah.
And so then it's looking at how do we decrease those risk factors through our healthy living types of things, you know, brain stimulation. And at the same time, if you've always done crossword puzzles, perhaps try something else, because that's not necessarily challenging as much as trying something new. Being able to move a bit more, getting out, you know, with, whether we call it exercise or dancing or movement, those are good things. Our healthy diet, like the Mediterranean diet, you know, leaner meats, more fruits and vegetables and good grains and nuts, that's always helpful as well. Those kinds of things that, again, it isn't going to prevent us from having dementia, but it can decrease our risk of it and even possibly delay that onset mm-hmm. of dementia, which is, you know, instead of at 68 years of age, perhaps it's something that, you know, we don't start seeing the signs or those symptoms of until maybe 82. And, you know, whereas still, you're 82, like you've got a lot of life to live, but that does change things in how we are living too.
How is it that you encounter folks who notice changes or notice dementia in another person? If you're hearing them recount, what kind of springs a red flag for you and what doesn't when someone is saying, I'm noticing this and it's alarming to me, or should I be alarmed, as opposed to when you go, you know, I'm not real worried about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't diagnose, which
right.
is great, but
right.
but those kind of warning signs, again, like, we, you know, have there been a lot of changes in a person's life? So mm-hmm. that kind of, as you were sharing before, those stresses, you know, that can cause cognitive stress,
hospitalization,
absolutely.
And someone getting confused
yeah.
about being hospitalized,
yep.
really common, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or moving, you know,
moving to another home.
Yeah. And for any of us,
yeah.
right? Like, there's just a whole different routine that we
right.
have to come up with and figure out.
And, right.
But moving, especially, you know, if there is some cognitive change that's, you know, that's been concerning, possibly mm-hmm. either for the person or for family and friends around them. Kind of those repeating questions that people ask, or, you know, getting confused with time and place. You know, we all misplace things.
Right.
So we have this class, it's called the 10 Warning Signs of Dementia. Oftentimes we'll call it, what's the difference between losing your keys or misplacing your keys and not knowing what your keys are,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's like, I can misplace my keys because I might not put them in the exact same spot every time when
right.
I come in. So
or
that's
be
one
talking
technique.
On the phone right. and doing it at the same time right. and putting it in another place.
Right.
Yeah.
But when I find those keys, like, and typically we can, without dementia, you can typically retrace your steps, depending on how much you've gotten distracted
yeah.
between,
yeah.
you know, missing the keys and trying to find them again. But with a person with dementia, it becomes much more of a struggle to retrace those steps. And then if they do find those keys, they might not know what that's for,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, okay, this is a key and I do something with it, but what does it go to?
Right.
Not just like, oh, which outside door it might go to,
right.
but, oh, this starts my
What's
car.
What's the function?
Right, the function of
right.
it. So that's certainly something that's concerning. More of those judgment types of things, too. Especially early on in the disease is when those scams really can be taken, or a person can be taken advantage of from scams. You know, that trusting, oh, I should do this. Yeah, oh, I've got to move this money around. And, oh, they're telling me that I'll get a better percentage rate on this, or just whatever it might
yeah.
be. You know, or there's a bit of a, oftentimes a philanthropy that starts in dementia. And, you know, we get the request from, you know, nonprofits, us included. But is it also places that are not legitimate.
Right.
And so then those checks can be written and those kinds of things.
I want to come back to that in just a moment. I'm Chris Kingdon-Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. Laura Deloy is with me today. She's program and educator, education manager with the Alzheimer's Association and California Central Coast chapter. We'll be talking about the challenges many families have with loved ones who have some form of dementia. And Laura's going to be offering some helpful tips and some resources for being involved and staying involved with that person and having it be as pleasant an experience for both, for everybody concerned. If you'd like to be a part of today's discussion, and certainly if you've had some of these experiences that you want to share, we welcome you to join us on our phone line today. It's 805-781-3875. We'd love to have your voice be added to the mix. And Laura, you were talking about, you know, in earlier stages of dementia, sometimes, you know, people do get somewhat philanthropic or may feel philanthropic or see, you know, dogs on the screen that look so in need of shelter and then get a phone call from someone who's saving animals or veterans. You know, they're a veteran or were part of, you know, a World War II effort for the USO and really support veterans and get a call for a vets organization that may not be legit, and unfortunately a lot have been found not to be, and start making monetary donations. Mm-hmm. You know, and that really struck a chord with me because I know for my mom, that was, you know, those were two very special things, and she got hooked in with a lot of them. And I've heard that from so many folks of finding when they finally get enough trust to go into their parents' home and look through some of their correspondence, all the pens and the little tchotchkes that they're collecting that, you know, they're giving these donations and getting more and more. How can family approach that?
Yeah, that pen, that actually hit a dear friend of mine. Her father passed away in the past year, and that there was an entire Rubbermaid box of just pens from everywhere.
He must have known my mother because my mother had one too, and cards, you know, like greeting cards.
Yep. Address labels.
Boxes of them.
Yeah. I mean, and those are, you know, there are those do not solicit lists.
Right.
We can't always guarantee that'll stop everything,
right,
but it can stop some of those things. Trying to, you know, I think it's, and it is that fine line of going in and taking control versus working with the
autonomy,
person.
Right?
Yeah. Because, you know, we're still adults, right? And we do get to make those decisions, but it is, I don't have the absolute answer to all of that for sure, but it's, you know, really just trying to be aware as much as we can. And if it isn't us as family, like, is there a neighbor or a buddy who, you know, stops by and they have confidence in somebody that, you know, you can trust in that way? Especially in those early stages, I think with the when you start to see somebody who maybe is more disheveled in their appearance, who used to always have like from head
pristine.
To toe, pristine, everything color coordinated. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, that's a different style you're going with, you know, which can be okay. But it's like, is there something else going on? I think, too, like going back to the trying to see, you know, is it dementia? Is it not dementia? Looking really at what's been happening in their lives. Like we said, has there been any kind of big changes, either a death or loss of a loved one, a spouse? Like that can really change a person's cognitive space. And if they've been, you know, living together and experiencing life together for a long time, oftentimes they can prop each other up, you know, and think of spouses in that way. And then all of a sudden, wow, you know, dad's no longer around. And we realize, wow, mom is decline tremendously. Mm-hmm. And so some of that can be grief, but some of it also can be, hey, we don't have all of those points in place anymore in the home. And so she isn't able to count on that type of or those types of routines. But it's also looking at, are there any other biological things going on with the person? You know, is there another type of infection that's happening? Is there, you know, any other, maybe a stroke or, you know, small stroke or something like that that's happening? Something that's happening with their heart. What are the, you know, their sodium levels and their, you know, vitamin D and B12? Mm-hmm. Are they, how dehydrated are they?
And hydration.
Hydration makes a huge difference. Yeah. So all of those things, like that's where, you know, if you start to see or hear some of those repeating conversations, that's out of the norm. Things that are really changing those, what we call activities of daily living or mm-hmm. ADLs, and, you know, things that I've always been able to do. And now, yeah, that, you know, casserole recipe that mom was always, you know, absolute on has now become sweeter. Tremendously sweeter because use sugar instead of salt or,
right.
you know, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, being able to check in and have a conversation, and I always encourage, I mean, just communication in general, right? Trying to be the positive space and, oh, wow, well, this is, did you do something different with this casserole? Are you trying a new recipe? Oh, you know what? I forgot. I use the sugar instead of the salt. Ah, you know, maybe that's been happening. And then being able to try and open a door in that way, as opposed to just, you know, pushing our way through into conversations. I know that's an ideal situation, and it doesn't happen with every situation because we're human and we all have different relationships. But really trying to, you know, as opposed to being a directive as to like, this isn't correct. Why are you doing this? You know, adding an argument, typically not a great way to enter into a conversation about somebody's memory loss. You know?
Yeah. Talk about, if you can, a little bit. One of the things that I see is a natural response, and I have flipped into this too, mm-hmm. is don't you remember?
Right. Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that and what the result of that is and how maybe to state something without using it.
Right. And that is not an uncommon manner, right? And we all do it. Or getting a little bit irritated. It's like, oh my God, how many times did you ask that question?
Right.
You know, and it's like, okay, right. They're asking this for the first time. Like, especially once we get into dementia and you know, okay, this is what's happening. It's a biological disease that's changing their brain and not being able to have those neural connections happening as either accurately or as quickly. And so whenever, you know, you get into this, well, don't you remember? I mean, a lot of times a person, there are typically two responses is, no, I don't, and I'll argue, mm-hmm. or, oh, I don't, no, I don't, and you withdraw. And both of, it seems to be oftentimes either or. And so that can lead to an argument. It can also lead to just feeling less and less of a person.
Right.
You know, a classic one that I have heard in the past was like, well, just push that button and it'll lift up the chair and you'll be able to get up and go walk into the kitchen and we'll have dinner. And it starts with the word just.
Yeah.
And well, I don't know where that button is.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have to push it and hold it down versus just pushing it once, right? And these are things like if that's happening to a guy with a big education or, you know, the person who is like knows everything about electronics, well, you don't want to admit your lack of knowledge,
right?
Which isn't a lack of knowledge. It's just that lack of access to mm-hmm. that particular behavior, mm-hmm. right? And so being able to say, oh, here's a button, press and hold that. And then once that happens, go to the next step. Because that's a lot of times we are really good about talking fast and having a lot of instructions at one time. Mm-hmm. And so even the like, press the button so the chair will lift you up and you'll be able to stand up and use your walker and go into the kitchen. That's way too much for the person who has dementia because they can't process all of those steps.
It needs so to really go step to, by step.
Yeah. Yeah. Or two steps or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, I can relate to how when you're exhausted, mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. you're trying to do other things, perhaps raise a family, deal with children mm-hmm. at the same time that right. you're doing that, or you're coming home from work, or you're trying to work from home at the same time, it's hard.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Exhausting.
It's a lot. It absolutely is. Yeah. And that's many times when, you know, then unfortunately we get irritated. I mean, it's a part of our life. And so then, you know, that little irritation creeps into our voice or we get angry. And the person with dementia who's trying to do the one thing hears that. Mm-hmm. And it has always amazed me throughout my career, like how a person with dementia really picks up on that energy or that mm-hmm. just the tone of voice. It makes such a huge difference in how we communicate.
Yeah.
And so if there's even that part of arguing, so we got one of the many types of acronyms to use is DARE. So do not argue, reason, or explain with the person with dementia.
Explain that.
So if we argue with the person with dementia, like I said before, they'll either argue back and mm-hmm. you won't get anywhere,
or
they'll just shut down and mm-hmm. withdraw, and then you don't really get too far either. And then so reasoning, we try to reason. Well, if you do this, then we'll be, you know, I really need you to get into the car so that we can go to the doctor's appointment so that we can get this medication. And then you can, you know, have more of an even keel of all of everything that's going on in the house, right? That's just too much. All of that reasoning just gets really muddled in the person with dementia.
They can't process it.
They can't process it.
Okay.
They'll try to reason with us many times or with family members. And it's like, well, I can't do that. And that doesn't make any sense because my chair doesn't move over there. And you're mm-hmm. like, well, that didn't make sense to me either. And so it's reasoning that happens that is just, it's muddled. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, and then, so do not argue, reason, or explain. Again, if we explain something, it's a lot of words that are coming at a person who's dealing with this cognitive loss that can't necessarily put all of those parts and pieces together to make sense. And so the person with dementia may be having more difficulty in receiving the understanding of like what I might say to them. Or it may be them having more difficulty the expression of.
Right.
So it can be either, you know, it can be both and or either or, that expressive or the receptive types of communication.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break here and we will be back to talk more with Laura in just a moment. Over to you, Brad.
We'll return to Central Coast Voices in just a moment, but I want to take just a moment here to talk to you about community service, which this show is a good example of the type of community engagement that KCBX brings you. You know, we know that you rely on KCBX for some rigorous fact-based reporting in the highest priority. Even during uncertain times, KCBX has existed to serve the Central Coast community from national affairs to affairs at home and affairs right inside your home, just like our topic today. And we can only do that with your support. That's what keeps this service strong and will keep this station alive for another 50 years as we approach a very big anniversary for this station. So we can only do it with your help, so please give today at kcbx.org, or you can call us during business hours at 800-549-8855. And as always, thank you for being a huge part of making Central Coast Public Radio happen here with KCBX. Ahead today on our Thursday on KCBX, we've got Latino USA following this program at 2 o'clock. That's followed by Fresh Air at 3 and then Marketplace at 4. Just a reminder that if you missed any portion of this program, it will be available to listen to later today on our website, kcbx.org, which, of course, is only brought to you through your very generous donations. With all of that, right now let's return to Chris Kington Barker and her guest and a very interesting topic here on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Chris.
Thank you, Brad, and welcome back. Laura Deloy, Program and Education Manager with the Alzheimer's Association, Central California Central Coast Chapter, is here. We've been talking about the challenges many families have in caring for loved ones with dementia, and Laura is sharing some helpful tips and some resources with us this afternoon. And so we were talking a little bit about communication, mm-hmm. you know, how communication works, how we would like it to work when we're talking with someone who has dementia at different stages, mm-hmm. and how it doesn't work. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I gave the acronym of DARE, so Do Not Argue, Reason, or Explain, and that helps really at any stage. It honestly probably helps with any of us, regardless of dementia or not, which is really, I mean, and honestly, like if we really dive into communication tips and tools in dementia world, it is also very helpful just in our regular, you know, supposed typically functioning people. So things like approaching a person with dementia, like if you're, especially when you're caregiving at home or in any particular place, approaching them from the front, going slow. Like if you come up from behind to somebody with dementia, there's just different, they're not necessarily as aware. I'm also prefacing this with every person with dementia is different.
Right.
That's really important. But if you come up from behind for any of us, I know I jump, like, especially if I get engrossed in something. But a person with dementia starts to have less and less understanding of that kind of proprioceptive, what's happening around them. And so that may really scare them, startle them. And then, you know, maybe you get touched on the shoulder and, well, the first thing that happens is your hand flies up and then the person who's there may get hit. And so then that's a whole other behavior where it's like, well, they weren't really angry or upset, but now
it was
they've
reaction.
Been startled. Yeah, yeah. And have that reactionary type mm-hmm. of thing. So that just our approaches in when there is a dementia-related behavior going on makes a huge difference in what happens next, right? What is the behavior that comes out? So,
and Laura, approaching some people who have Alzheimer's too, doesn't their vision change as well
mm-hmm.
so that it becomes
narrower and smaller,
mm-hmm. narrower and narrower,
yeah.
so
almost
that
look,
they actually are looking
yep. like
at
through
very,
binoculars.
Very small vision. So
right.
they don't have peripheral vision.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And that just continues to increase typically, mm-hmm. You know, as well as just being able to process what they're seeing,
right.
like shadows and reflections can be really weird.
Scary.
And scary. Yeah.
yeah.
And it's interesting, like even reflections like in a window, like if it's dark at night and you have the picture window, you know, there's no blinds or curtains on it.
Yes.
Well, it's lovely, but it can really concern a person with dementia because they see that reflection and they don't know that it's inside and they think that people are outside. And maybe then they want to, you know, run outside to take care of those people on the lawn
right.
or, you know, they call 911 because somebody's out there and there's not. And
right.
whatever the case might be, or they see themselves in a reflection in the mirror. Well, they don't recognize that person because that person, you know, in their mind, they're not 84 years old.
They're
30 or
yeah.
they're 20. And it's
yeah.
like, well, why is my grandma here?
Yeah.
Right.
That old woman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or it's like, yeah, you know, I was talking to this guy. He was in the mirror and mm-hmm. he's really handsome. He's great looking, you know, and it's like this reflection. And sometimes it can be comforting.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll talk to them like a friend. other times, like, and I've heard this from many caregivers, where it kind of gets to a spot where it's like, well, why is that person always here? Mm-hmm. And then it starts to have some suspicion. Right. And so, it's like, okay, if you start to see those changes, then what do you do? You know, as opposed to telling the person, oh, well, that's you, don't worry about it. You know, it's like, no, that's not me. I do not have those wrinkles and I do not have that gray hair.
Right.
And so, you know, if it's so disturbing, remove the mirror.
Yeah.
Or cover it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever it is that we can do to meet them where they are.
Yeah.
Because we are the ones that can adapt more quickly and readily. And, you know, and if you're still like in those earlier stages, being able to ask, like, perhaps what's going on, especially in those times when there is a bit more lucidity, right, where there's not. And we know that if you've, you know, been in any time spent with a person with dementia, it's like it flows back and forth throughout the day. And sometimes, you know, or day to day, hour to hour. And sometimes it's like you have this full on conversation as if they didn't have this disease process happening. Mm-hmm. And other times there's nothing that's connecting at all.
Right.
And so being able to, you know, maybe ask about what they're feeling, how is this going? How are they dealing with this in more of those lucid times? You can help to understand, okay, do you want me to try to fill in the word that you're coming up with? Or do you want me to give you some time?
Mm-hmm.
Because either of those are different processes, right? If we start to answer somebody and layer in, I mean, again, with or without dementia, it'll send us down different neurological pathways. And then we don't recall what we were going to talk about. And we've all had those spots, I think. I have. but it's how do we get back on track then? And so being able to, you know, help create a positive situation for the person with dementia as much as we can. Because again, we're the ones that can adapt.
I want to go back and revisit really a key point that you were making too, of arguing with the person mm-hmm. about, again, no, you're not seeing that. No, that's not mm-hmm. there. No, there's nobody outside. No, that's just you.
Right.
Those things are ineffective.
Yeah. And so it's kind of going into that, utilizing validation can
right.
be really helpful.
Yeah.
And so, wow. Yeah, you know, I don't know. Is that your grandma that's in the mirror? Oh, tell me more about her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't remember much about her. What can you share? Did you all have like a favorite recipe or a favorite, you know, place that you went? Didn't she really like that one park? You know, being able to kind of get to those different memories without being like, well, don't you remember that?
Right.
As you had shared before.
Right.
And it's trying to give some cues to, because then it's also, if you can validate that sense of, yeah, it is kind of scary to see people out on the lawn, but we've taken care of it. And, you know, we're going to maybe turn away from the window. Like, that's another option, like to physically move or to engage them in something else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but certainly trying to validate their emotional space as much as possible versus merely diverting their attention
right.
with something shiny or a different activity or
mm-hmm.
something like that. Because then it's like, and then more than likely, and there's no fail proof way, but if we validate more often than not, they're going to be, oh, okay, you hear me. Somebody else is getting that this is really frustrating for me too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it starts to de-escalate things. And if you, you know, kind of have a time of day that, whether it's in the evening getting ready for bed, maybe there's some anxiety about going to sleep and you turn off the light. Okay, can we have a nightlight on? But then does the nightlight show different shadows?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like you can kind of keep going and going and going and going. And, you know, what are all of the answers? And it can be different day to day. And that's that adaptation. We become creative. We try to and patient. I know a lot of times people are like, I don't have the patience. I don't know how to go about this. And so that's also where we can come in. I mean, we don't come into the home, but we come in with education, classes out in the community or online in April, on April 23rd. So Wednesday morning at 10 a.m., we have an effective communication tips and tools strategies class. And we're pairing with Improv for Good.
Oh,
it's out in the community. Super fun.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. Thea and I met. And so we're talking about just how do you use improv and the idea of yes and.
Yeah.
In communication as a caregiver, particularly those with dementia, where yes, and we can also go and do this. And so getting some of those tools for caregivers. So that's on April 23rd at St. Barnabas Episcopal Church in Arroyo Grande. And it's the first time that we've collaborated.
Do people need
this,
to register in advance for that?
That'd be ideal. Yeah. Or, yeah.
Would I'm they call the Alzheimer's Association?
Yeah. Okay. They can do that.
Okay. You know, yeah. The thing that keeps coming up for me as you're talking about this communication is really to remember you can't fix the dementia. So if you're trying to fix somebody's memory, you can't.
Right.
And asking them, don't you remember?
Mm-hmm.
Or trying to get them to calm down is trying to fix something you can't fix.
Right.
So what you're – I love the improv idea that teaching people how to go with the flow in a way that you can adapt and also let go of all of that negative energy that can get sucked into it, because it's hard.
Yeah.
It is so hard.
It is. Yeah, it absolutely is. And it is. How do we adapt? And we're, you know, we're in the midst of our own lives, like every caregiver is, right?
Yep.
We all have our stuff. And I think especially about, you know, those of us who may be in that sandwich generation of caring for either young children or kids who are going off to college or grandkids that, you know, are coming into the picture, and caring for or aging parents. You know?
Or, you know, we have our partner. You know, whatever that relationship is that you think is, you're going to be doing things and traveling and what you're doing is caregiving. And it's a whole different life than you thought you were going to have at this point in your life.
Absolutely is. And that's, you know, and there's a whole realm of anticipatory grief and dementia. And when you receive that that diagnosis, or you're just even noticing that, oh, there's a lot of changes and I've got to do something about this. Like, what does that look like? You know, and we can be both and with all of the emotions, and be sad and upset and happy that we have this time together and frustrated that it's not going to be how we were anticipating growing old together.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's so much in all of that.
I want to get to, I mean, I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX. If you joined us recently for today's show and you want to enjoy the entire broadcast, it'll be available on kcbx.org. Under the On Demand tab, just click Central Coast Voices and you'll find this show along with many other past shows to choose from. Laura DeLoy is the other voice with me today. And we've been talking about dementia and some tips on how to really get along in that environment, in that space of dealing with someone with dementia, and really understanding. And what we're going to go back to now is understanding a little bit more. If you want to join us or ask a question or add a comment and share something that you've learned, you can call us at 805-781-3875. We'd love to hear from you. Laura, let's talk a little bit about behaviors of dementia, some of the things that are more common that seem to come up more times than not for patients with dementia that are really kind of challenging.
Yeah, it's interesting because people ask about the stages of dementia and kind of like, when is the stage that they get angry? And and again, like, it's not, you know, in knowing this, we that's oftentimes what we think of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's part of our education and awareness, is helping folks to understand that every person with dementia is different. And also, like, you as a caregiver are not alone. Like, your person who you're caring for with dementia, yeah, there are at least six other people probably in your neighborhood who have dealt or are dealing with those things. So I think that's an important part. But thinking about behavior, so whether it's anger or if it's suspicion or if it's wandering or those repeating questions, it gets frustrating as a caregiver. So, you know, how we approach things, how we approach if we have triggers. And so whether those are environmental triggers, if it's too chilly, if it's too hot, if it's too bright, if it's too dark, like just thinking about that in the room or the home where we are. Like if we're in a cozy space and home and we're like, oh, let's go outside for a walk. Well, you open the front door. Well, it's lovely sunshine and you want to go out into it, but it could be super bright. And just visually, that may really throw off that neurological connection that's happening in their sight, in their brain. And then it's like, nope, we're shutting down. Or you kind of, you know, dig in and don't want to go anywhere or do anything. So there's those kinds of things to think about. There's biological triggers that can happen. So again, are they too hot, too cold? Do they need to go to the bathroom? Are they tired? Are they thirsty? Or do you just need to get up and move a little bit? Because a person with dementia doesn't always have that thought process. Like some folks are going to walk all the time and be, you know, somewhat agitated and up and down and up and down. And then others are, you know, maybe they've been sitting for 45 minutes to an hour or more, and they haven't just moved and adjusted their muscles, and that can be painful.
Mm-hmm. But it's not registering pain. It's right. Registering somewhere discomfort, but not, I need to change this position.
Exactly. And then it's like, well, if you go in and you maybe start to have a conversation with them and they're irritated, and it's like, well, what did I do?
Yeah.
Why are you mad at me? Like, I'm just asking if you wanted, you know, some lemonade this afternoon.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there's anger. It's like, okay, well, what's the trigger to that anger? So it's always kind of thinking about those things. Sometimes it's also people. Like me going in and talking to somebody might not be effective, but maybe it would be, you know, my friend who has a different relationship. Like if, you know, one of my parents, if I were to do that, they don't know them as well, you know, and some, it's kind of, you know, we do different things for different people. We have those different expressions. And so that can be helpful. Like if one sibling isn't able to get mom to get to the car to go to the doctor's appointment, well, then, you know, the son comes by and that works. And they're like, we're going to go get ice cream. Well, on the way to get ice cream, we happen to stop by and the doctor's office, but we're going to get ice cream afterwards, or we're going to get it before, and you know, whatever works, right? Those kinds of things.
Right.
And sometimes it's also other, you know, professionals who are out in our community in the field, and whether that's, you know, there are geriatric care managers, there's, you know, home care specialists who can come in and go to people with doctor's appointments. You know, sometimes that's helpful. It's kind of figuring out what works. And that's where, you know, we here in Slo County, we many times don't feel like we have as many resources possibly, but we do really work well together. And I will share that, like, we refer back and forth amongst agencies and organizations all the time. And there are so many that I would refer, you know, personally in my own life if I were dealing with some of these same things. So whether that's Hospice of Slo County and Kim Chartrand, who's a fantastic care manager, or if it's Dignity Health, there's a family caregiver support program that helps with some short-term care management. There's Coast Caregiver Resource Center with Nell and Karen and Renee, who are social workers, and they, again, can help with some care plans.
And these are free?
These are free. All of these resources are no cost.
Yeah.
And, you know, just different. There's one-to-one counseling that can happen. There's also adult day centers that can help to provide that respite for the caregiver at home who is stressed, who may still be working, who, you know, needs that time away, as well as the person with dementia. Gives them different stimulation. CAPSLO runs the adult day center that's up in Paso Robles. It's a social model, so primarily people with dementia, but it is Monday through Friday. They have a sliding scale. They accept VA benefits as well. Santa Maria, there's a Wisdom Center, which is an adult day health center. And that, you, if you have SenCal Health, that's an accepted form of payment, the VA, and then they also have private pay as well. And these are places that, you know, you can get transportation door to door set up as well with those. That just helps to provide another piece of the puzzle of caregiving, and also can help to provide some peace of mind for ourselves as caregivers in home too.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about wandering, because and sundowning, what sundowning is, and a little bit about why that is a thing.
Yeah, sundowning. So we don't know why exactly all of it is happening, as far as I understand. But oftentimes sundowning can be kind of at that late afternoon, which is why we call it sundowning, as the sun goes down. And those different changes in a person with dementia, some of it is, it seems to be anxiety driven, like at the end of the day. If in the facility or such, there's a shift change, there's changes that are happening. Or it can be the, hey, we're getting ready to make dinner. Perhaps the grandkids came home from school because they get dropped off at the grandparents before, you know, whatever that might be. There is kind of this change that can happen. Oftentimes there's anxiety that comes along with it, and people with dementia want to get up and go, and they got to go home, and I got to go home. And there's repeating kinds of behaviors. And so if we can look at that and see that, oh, at about 3:45, it starts to occur. So try at like 3:15, make sure that they've gone to the restroom, you know, get them a snack, engage them in an activity that they might enjoy, whether that's going outside for a walk or going through the garden or listening to music, getting up, you know, dancing a little bit, chair dancing. That's totally awesome. it's great, great interactions. But any of those kinds of things, if we can help, and we can't always stave it off, but, you know, or sometimes even if there's a bit of an anti-anxiety medication, maybe that, like a really low dose, that can help to just take that edge off a little bit. But really trying to, you know, if we look at, and not every day is exactly the same, but if you start to see those patterns, then where can we adapt again and make those changes or help to make those changes in the life at home to make it easier both for us as a caregiver as well as for the person with dementia? Because oftentimes that then can lead into wandering. Wandering can happen at any point in time. About 60-70% of people with dementia will wander. So a lot of times people are like, oh, we're not at that stage yet. And it's like, okay, but understand that there are things like Project Lifesaver, which is a radio transmission device that a person wears that they can't take off very easily, at least. and it's through the Sheriff's Department and also through the Senior Volunteer Services or at Paso Senior Center, but it covers the whole county. And so if a person is prone to wandering, whether that's a person with dementia or it could be some, you know, a child who has autism as well, who may be that flight risk, they can wear that device. And if the person then, if you realize I haven't seen them for 20 minutes or more, where might they be? You can't put eyes on them. You call 911, let them know that you have Project Lifesaver. It's a person with dementia, and this is the last place I saw them. Then they turn on that radio transmission device. They can triangulate where that person is. They send out a team that's trained in caring for people with dementia, and they come out and search and rescue for the person with dementia. And it's just literally, as the name is, Project Lifesaver. And it is a countrywide program, but it is specific to each county, just as as it goes through the sheriff's departments.
Is typically. That something that people need to purchase on their own? Or
yes, it is a fee, but they do have scholarships as well that can cover that. So, yeah.
Okay. And they'd look that up online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. That's Project Lifesaver. So, yeah. So, and I guess just really considering like all of the collaborations that happen. You know, we talk about the different types of possibilities of respite care to help support the caregiver at home. It's, it is overwhelming. We do recognize that, and you know, we get a lot. You know, I give a lot of referrals about different organizations or kind of places to check in to for assistance and help. But then it is up to the person, the caregiver, you know, or the family, like trying to get a friend unit. Like family, I don't always think doesn't have to be blood relatives.
Right.
But who are those people in
a community?
Yeah. And we have such strong communities around here, and we're part of different organizations. And, you know, you hear, oh, well, they're not going to want to help me. I don't want to be a burden. And you just always think about, like, what if my friend was in that position and they didn't ask me for help? It would be crushing, right? So it's like, how do we reach out and really help one another? And I think no matter what, like there are people out there. It's trying to find where. You know?
What is the when is the event that you were talking about? That is the education that's going to be happening.
Yeah. So the community, it's a effective communication strategy. So it's Wednesday, April 23rd. It's 10 to 11 a.m. at St. Barnabas Episcopal Church in Arroyo Grande. And then also just encouraging folks, especially caregivers, to reach out about support groups, you know, whether those are through us, through Hospice of SLO, through Coast Caregiver Resource Center. That's where you really connect with others who are going through the same thing. You don't have to re-explain yourself every time, and you get resources that are amazing. And I also, so we have the support group list on our website as well.
And ALZ.
ALZ.org. Yeah. And then you can search for California Central Coast. And our helpline number, too, it's 24/7, many languages, always Spanish and English, is 1-800-272-3900.
All right. I want to thank my guest, Laura Deloy, Program and Education Manager with the Alzheimer's Association, California Central Coast Chapter. Next week, please join Lata Morty and her guest, Edwin Weaver, Executive Director of Fighting Back Santa Maria Valley. Reminder to enjoy, if you enjoy this program and other programming, we need your support. This is our pledge drive for the spring, and you can donate by going to kcbx.org or giving a one-time donation or becoming a sustaining donor. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for listening and joining us today.